Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome. It was so great to meet a few podcast listeners and Sober Club members last weekend at the Health Hub, at the Wellness Way Health Hub. It was a great day. It's great to be reminded of so much wisdom when it comes to natural health. Some of it kind of going back to olden days almost, where you literally kind of look at your body's ability to heal. It was an amazing day. Great to meet up with Clive, who does the best supplements ever. Check the show notes for the link. And I did my talk and then celebrated my 20-year anniversary of the book. And of course, it was World Book Day later on in the week. So I feel like my whole week has been about books. Anyways, talking books. I'm going to be chatting to author Anna Donaghy about her book, What Are You Thirsty For? And I'm going to be interviewing Catherine Gray, just a reminder of that really exciting evening. I so hope you can come. It's Wednesday, 1st of April, and it's at Hello Love, which is a little kind of studio cafe in Bloomsbury. And I'm going to be chatting to Catherine all about her new book, Little Addictions. But of course, we'll talk about the unexpected joy of being sober and all the other stuff. It'll be difficult to shut us up, I'm guessing. It's 6:30 p.m. start on Wednesday, 1st of April. It'll be so lovely to have some podcast listeners there, some coaches I've trained, some Sober Club members. Everyone is very welcome. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll be able to buy your tickets there, but getting quick because the venue is quite small. It'd be really great to see you there. And if you're a bit nervous, by the way, because I know I was the very first sober thing that I went to. I think I'd been sober for about two and a half months, and I was so nervous. I mean, literally kind of sat in the car park outside the venue, feeling too scared to go in. It's crazy. I have no idea what I was expecting, but of course it was completely fine because sober people are actually lovely. So but if you are nervous, then just drop me a message and I'll make sure I meet you and welcome you and introduce you to somebody. It's going to be really good. Wednesday, 1st of April with Catherine Gray. What else can I share with you? It's been also a very interesting week in the Sober Club with a couple of people who have done exciting things since they have quit the booze. I had just a lovely email from someone who had just completely stepped out of her comfort zone and gone back to studying after so many years of thinking that, you know, she couldn't do it. It was that imposter syndrome thing that crops up so often, doesn't it? And I see this all the time with people I train to be coaches. Sometimes people do the training quite early on in their own journey and they do it for themselves, which is a fantastic reason to do the training. There's so much transformation. But of course, you get all the skills as well to be a coach. And one person that I was working with had done the training ages ago and not sort of used it for anything, but been, well, I say not used it. She had used it for all kinds of things, but just not become a coach. But she'd used it in her personal life in all kinds of ways. And then eventually now, some time on, it's time to sort of step into that new identity. It's all about these new identities, isn't it? And become a coach and everything is, you know, we're kind of helping her get going and everything's rocking. And it's brilliant the way, you know, it takes a different amount of time for everyone, doesn't it? But it is amazing how when we embrace all of who we are, which I genuinely think you can't do that when you're drinking. You just can't. You're stuck in this endless loop of self-loathing and God knows what. So when you finally quit, it can take some time, but being sober makes you brave. I really believe that. It really adds that new dimension to who you are. And it just helps you recognize you're worth it. If there's something you want to go after, well, go after it, right? You know, you really are worth it. So, it's been a great week, very positive in that respect. I've had lots of really positive conversations. Oh, and it was my birthday. Thank you very much for all the birthday wishes. I do find it interesting. I know I've shared this before, but I always remember that years ago, when I was drinking, my birthdays were always, well, obviously an excuse to, you know, start drinking early. But also, I remember being quite grumpy on lots of birthdays. I'm not proud of this. It was not a great trait, but I would kind of have this thing that you know, well, people ought to make me feel special as it's my birthday, you know, my family and stuff. And I really should be getting a great gift, or I should be, someone should plan a party, or I'd be so grumpy. And actually, it was quite interesting because I remember my daughter when she was, it was before I quit the booze, but when she was only young, but I remember her saying words to the effect of, why don't you just sort it out for yourself? If you want to party, why don't you just sort it out? And I remember thinking, well, why don't I actually? And the reason was because it was just validation I was seeking somehow. I'm not actually sure what I was after, but whatever it was crazy because, and it was actually just because I didn't value myself. So I was looking to external validation the whole time for somebody else to be, you know, praising me or sorting stuff out for me. And now I've quit the booze, I'm able to just recognize, you know, my own worth, and if I want to do something, I'll do it. I'll do something nice for myself. It doesn't require other people to get it right. I've also since, of course, become an NLP practitioner and realized that one of the fascinating things that NLP teaches you is that everyone has their map of the world. Everyone sees things in a different way, and just because someone has not, you know, reacted to you or done something for you in the way that you were hoping, perhaps it's because you didn't communicate what it was you needed. So there's all of those layers anyway. So yes, I had a very nice birthday, thank you. And also I think that the soberversaries become more even more important than your birthdays as you get older. I remember Elton John talking about this, that he doesn't celebrate his birthday anymore. He celebrates his soberversary every year. It's fascinating, isn't it? So anyways, just a reminder then, go to thesoberclub.com/events, grab your tickets for the Catherine Gray event, which is Wednesday, the 1st of April. Also, if you are interested in training to become a coach, we do have our next free webinar on Tuesday, 17th of March. That's at 7:30 p.m. It's online. It's a great deep dive into what might be next for you. Absolutely no pressure. It's usually a really fun evening and just connecting with like-minded people. So do register for that if you're interested. You don't have to already be working as a coach or a practitioner. You do have to have quit the booze. That's important, even if you haven't had a long time of sobriety. So that piece is important. But you know, it'd be lovely to have you on board. So do check that out or share with anyone you know who might be interested. Just go to thesoberclub.com/events. Also, you'll see on there the event on the 11th of March online, which is hosted by one of the sober coaches I train, Tony, who's doing a free webinar for guys. So you'll find all of that there as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My guest is Anna Donaghy, author of this great book, What Are You Thirsty For? If you are watching a clip, there is the book. Anna, welcome. Man, did you get some good press? Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. I was very pleased. Yeah. Not all of my own doing, obviously, as you know, these things.
No, but it's very unusual. Anybody listening who's had a book out will know that whether you have a published book or a self-published book, actually, it's really hard. And although all publishers say, oh, we'll do all your promo for you, trust me, I've had 5 publishers. And let's put it this way, I've not had the pressure you've had. So big congratulations. It was amazing.
Thank you very much. From you, I will take that. I'm pleased.
Yeah,
thank you. Yes.
Fantastic. Well done. And it's just so fantastic, isn't it? Just sharing that message that you don't have to wait till you get to rock bottom. That's the thing that I can't stop banging on about, because you see so many pieces all the time about, oh, I was drinking 16 bottles of vodka and I was doing this and I was doing that. And the old me would have glanced at those articles and then just thought, oh, thank God I'm not that bad, and then moved on. And what you're doing, like just like me, is you're helping people recognize they can, as the strap line of the book is, rethink alcohol and rethink the life they want. And I love it. So let's just take me back and tell me a bit about your story in the past. Let's, if anyone hasn't heard you speak before, let's get a little bit of your backstory.
So you're right. I think I echo your message that you don't have to wait until things got bad. Things got quite bad with me. I certainly let drinking take over. I started drinking when I was reasonably young, about 15. It just never really never really went away. I can look back now over each decade of my life and see how it grew. Stealth-like, for sure. Yeah. Never revealing itself with huge drama. Lots of mini dramas that seemed to follow me around, but never anything, as you would say, coining that phrase, rock bottom, a slow and steady chipping away at myself and the quality of my life, for sure, to a point of depletion. And even that was hard to spot, because I pushed myself at work and I played hard and I wrapped all of that up in my identity within the advertising industry.
Which is the booze industry, of course.
Well, it's just what one does, darling.
Yeah, exactly. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day and they were saying to me, oh, if you were in the music industry, working in radio and the music industry, it must have been everywhere. And the answer is yes, it actually was. And it was free. And yeah. I guess it probably was for you too. But interestingly, the more I chat to clients, the more I realise actually every industry is boozy.
Yeah, I think there's crossover, isn't there? I spent, as you would have done in that music industry, in the media, you would have spent time in a hospitality, you would have been wining and dining, you would have been being wined and dined, you would have been traveling all over the place and staying in hotels, and you would have had an expense card, you would have been traveling through airport lounges, and it was all there. It was actually, as you say, a perk of the job. It felt free, because if I was clocked in on working hours and drinking, then it was expensible.
Yeah, exactly.
It really was.
My God, I know. It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, it just mounted up. And for as long as I stayed in that Soho bubble, which I did until I went on my first maternity leave, you just looked everywhere and everyone else was doing the same. So there wasn't a sense of this is odd or I'm behaving in a way which is unseemly or unbecoming. I was literally doing what everybody else was doing. And it was only when I retreated to the suburbs to have my children that I realized that wasn't what everyone else was necessarily doing, or I looked a little bit more over the top in my behavior. For example, I realized I was probably in trouble.
What was the turning point for you? When did the crux come?
I had many points, like leaving Soho to go to Ealing and have children, where I started talking to myself about, you need to do something about this. It was another good 10 or 11 years before I actually did, which I think is quite a common.
Yeah, I often talk about the fact that I was waking up at 3 a.m. and with this voice. But actually, when I think back, that was happening for at least 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
5 years before that, I'd been aware that I need to stop. It just felt impossible, didn't it? Because we weren't, I'm guessing neither of us were willing to, we weren't going to go and rock up to a GP. I certainly wasn't, and go down that route. It felt secret because certainly back then, there really wasn't anyone talking about the benefits.
No, it felt really secret. It felt very seedy, and all of which makes you feel terribly wrong, terribly isolated, terribly shameful, and therefore terribly locked into the ongoing sort of spiral, the feelings and the negativity that perpetuates the whole thing. If you feel helpless, because obvious help isn't at hand, which makes you feel hopeless,
Yeah, who's going through this, which is just bizarre, because now when I think back, I realise that a large majority of my friends were probably also waking up at 3 a.m. or having similar thoughts, but none of us spoke about it because it just felt too shameful. Yeah. It is. It's fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. So sorry, I interrupted you. Back to where you were, where you made the change.
Yeah. Well, I was just, by the time I was in my mid-40s, I was just on my knees. I was so tired and so exhausted, and cracks were showing in a lot of parts of my life. I was clinging on with my fingertips. I had this amazing ability to keep it looking like everything was all together at work. But I really wasn't. I had this horrible feeling as well that I was just waiting to be found out. My relationship with my husband was tense because I was holding a massive secret, and that's never good. I was literally involved in a pastime of secret drinking that he wasn't involved in, which in a marriage is not
that's good. The thing, isn't it? The secret drinking is often the thing that makes people think, oh, actually, this isn't right. Yeah,
I think he didn't really know which version of his wife was going to walk into the room. The one who'd already had a bottle but was pretending she was just having her first drink.
Yeah.
Or the one who was obviously smashed already. It got to an untenable situation where I just about had the sort of clarity of thought to be able to say, which is a point echoed in my book, this is not good enough.
Yeah.
It's not good enough. It was a half-life at best.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's a really interesting way of putting it, just to interrupt you there. In order to be able to notice that it's not good enough and that it's half-life, as it were, you've still got to have a little bit of self-esteem left to know you want something more, haven't you? And alcohol is so insidious because it chips away at that self-esteem and self-love. Mm-hmm. I've said so many times, even for someone like me who was allegedly so steeped in the world of woo and spirituality and self-love and working as a Hay House author, and there wasn't anything I didn't know about meditation and self-love, but I didn't have any for myself because over the years, alcohol chipped away and chipped away. So I genuinely believed I wasn't worth it. So it's then from that place, it's actually a gargantuan effort to try to recognize, actually, hold on a minute, maybe I am worth it. Maybe I can get my life back.
That's the first thing, I think. It's that first moment when you can say, I deserve
better.
I don't know what, I don't know quite yet what that looks like in terms of what I need to do.
Yeah.
But I don't want and I don't deserve this because if this were going to stretch out in front of me for, let's argue, another 45 years, what the hell? Do you know what I mean? It was literally,
And I talk about in the book, you say in the book, if alcohol came with a warning label, would you still reach for it? Questions like that. Do you drink to cope with stress? All of these things. So many people say, don't they, that if alcohol came onto the market now, it probably wouldn't get a license. I don't know. I'm a big money maker. I'm not sure that's true. But certainly we were able to just gloss over the harm it causes. I used to look at all the press studies around, oh, a glass of red wine is good for the heart, and think, oh, thank God for that. I always knew that was true. Now let me go and have a bottle of Sauvignon. Of course, I now realize that no wine is going to be best for the heart. Zero benefits. And it's absolutely.
But I think what you say is true in terms of that argument about if it came out onto the market these days, would it even pass health and safety? Possibly, possibly not. I think one of the points that I make in that book is we use it to self-medicate, but if it came with a list of contraindications, like most medications do.
Yes.
Would we put up with the downsides?
Yeah, it is true.
All of those things.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. The thing is, they wouldn't be able to list them all, would they? Because having said that, there are some medications that you open up the packet and the list is, you hold up the list of all the things.
Exactly. With alcohol, it would be literally temporarily.
May cause death.
Temporarily raises mood, but has about 40 fallouts associated with it.
All the cancer and all the illnesses and the fact that it makes you irritable and on. Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. What were the main, do you remember for you, just remind me how long you've been sober now?
About just over 5 years.
And do you remember the main benefits for you? Or was that 2020 then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you had all the other complications going
on. All the other stuff going on as well.
What were the benefits for you then? What was the, do you remember the kind of, because sometimes people say to me, what was the biggest thing from quitting? And I find it really difficult because there's so many things. If I could bottle it all, I'd literally be a multimillionaire.
I know. I think that probably the one that, it is hard to choose one, but if I could choose one that has gone on to have so much impact on others, it would be that reduced level of anxiety and improved sleep, because of course they have massive ripple effects throughout the rest of your lives. Yes, energy, yes, more time, yes, more clarity, but all of those come from being able to see clearly and having better sleep. So I think that would be the sort of the anchor from which so many other things just then ripple out, including the other massive one, which is that improved sense of self, a much better relationship with myself. Again, it's another ripple effect, isn't it, that permeates every relationship you have through life and what you believe you're even capable of.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you had children. I think, God, if only someone had told me when my kids were young, this is the best parenting hack ever. It's not necessarily going to behave. It's not going to mean that you're going to find all of parenting a breeze. But when you're not on the back foot, that's huge.
That's huge.
I think back now to the way I would let parenting issues, which I now know are everyone's issue. You think you're the only one who's got a kid. Buttons, don't you? I remember, oh my God, I tried everything, every parenting course, every book, and actually all I needed to do was become more authentic in who I was. And from that place, you can set your boundaries, you can do the right thing, you can say no when you need to, you can know that you're in the right, know that you're bigger than them, and still kind and empathetic and on, and all the things around being a good parent. But you can't do it when you're drinking, because it's almost like a little voice that says, who are you to try to tell them X and Y? And also
100%.
That awful expression that people sometimes say, oh, it's the drink talking.
Why? Yes. You feel utterly undermined by yourself.
Terrible thing.
I would agree with that, Janie. Utterly. You feel undermined by yourself. You feel like you're on very shaky ground. You're not even really sure whether that intuition you're listening to is a maternal instinct or what voice that is. You doubt yourself. You feel fallible. It's wretched. It really is. Also, the various stage of parenting, when I was a new mum, I put down my tiredness and anxiety to being a new mum. And then when I was in a mother of teens, I put it down to, it's just another life stage and tiredness, et cetera, et cetera. And I put so much down to my role as a mum and my life stage. When, as you say, just if I'd just taken alcohol out of the equation, a lot of the issues that I was experiencing at those stages in life would have been at least eased, if not removed.
Definitely. In your book, I'm just flicking through it, and talk about the chapter called How to Be a Man.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
There's that section's part of a sort of a conversation within the book about how we bury our feelings and how alcohol is very much part of our emotional management system. I refer to it in the book as our CEO, as the chief emotions officer. And we have a cultural predisposition within this country for stiff upper lip, men and women, whether it comes from boarding school culture or sort of Victorian times, proprietary, etc., there is a sense that we don't emote loudly and we don't emote long. We deal with our problems, we are efficient with our issues, and we don't necessarily bring them out into the public. And all it really does is partly explain a level of emotional illiteracy that we carry around through no fault of our own, none at all.
Yeah.
And this is problematic. It's problematic because enter alcohol. Emotions will do what emotions will do, which is try and bubble up. And alcohol does what it temporarily can do, which is try and contain them.
Yes.
And so it becomes a containment tool. And this I observe within the book, through conversations I've had on the podcast as well, becomes particularly sad and sometimes problematic with men for whom there is a big emotional disconnect. There's a real challenge with guys who walk around with these stereotypes. And that section of the book relates very much to a conversation I had with a mutual friend, Alex Trapp,
mm-hmm.
Alex Trapp rather, who basically, talks about the fact that he, like lots of lads in this country, is brought up with this idea that men don't cry.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that, yeah.
This is where alcohol becomes a very powerful tool.
Yeah.
For guys.
Yeah. We've had a lot of guys speak about this in the Sober Club. In fact, one of the coaches who trained with me, Tony, runs a webinar now, Sober Guys Having a Conversation, basically.
Yeah.
It's just great. Just to no pressure, just chat about sobriety. Literally that, which just makes it a bit more open. We just need to bring it out into the open, really, don't we? All of this, actually. One of the things you talk about in the book, stunted emotional growth. That's such an interesting one, isn't it? When we think about the fact that many of us, literally, in terms of our resilience and our emotional maturity, it was literally when we started drinking. And then after that, all the big stuff in our life was through the lens of alcohol. When I'm back, oh my God, everything. Wedding, among the holidays, my Christmases, my everything was through the lens of alcohol and funerals and grief. And it's not just good stuff. We use it for everything, don't we? Of course, we don't know how to cope with our emotions when we don't have that crutch.
And we don't know how to listen to them. This big generalization, obviously, if we don't listen to something, we don't get practice with feeling our emotions.
Yeah.
Then we start to fear them because they become unfamiliar to us. Within the book, it's a slightly glib analogy, but I talk about emotions as signals, and it's like a postal service. They're looking for a delivery, they're looking to land. But when we drink, we're literally intercepting these messages, intercepting these emotions. They're not landing where they need to land. They're being suppressed or numbed, which means we don't get proficient at managing them. And we therefore fear them. And so the vicious sort of circle continues. And I think it's a big statement, but I think it's practically impossible to grow as an individual, certainly emotionally, if you're a heavy drinker. Mm. And if we just keep intercepting these messages instead of listening to them.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it really is. It's why we behave so badly, isn't it? Because we're not grown up, as it were.
Yeah. Well, it's why we can. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like we can wake up one day and feel completely divorced from ourselves and adrift and unanchored and not really sure what are your values? I don't know. Or how have you ended up in this job? I don't know. It's just you just become slightly adrift because you're not listening to the inner self, the inner world.
It's really
true.
That's
really sad. And I think getting that agency back, getting that trust, not just listening to the messages, but trusting that you are able to manage them, like you mentioned, the grief or the upset, the anger, that they can't hurt you. They're not there to be fixed. They're just there to be experienced.
Yeah. One of my podcast guests many years ago, and I refer to her an awful lot, was Carla McLaren, who wrote a book called Embracing Anxiety. And she does a huge amount around the language of emotions. And you know, just remember her sort of phrase was, you know, we need to remind ourselves all emotions are welcome. Now, of course, we don't feel like that because we don't really want to welcome in guilt and shame and anger. We'd really rather not. But actually, when there's a time and a place for it, accept it, work out what it's trying to teach you, and you'll move really quickly. This too shall pass.
Yes.
To have all of those emotions, but we don't allow it. We don't allow it with children. If a child's upset, we just say, oh dear, poor you, have a sweet, rather than allowing the child to experience that emotion and recognize what it is and go through it, come out the other side.
And that is resilient. That is resilience. As people sometimes say, oh, resilience is about being strong, or resilience is about, and that's what I think resilience is about, knowing that whatever emotion is going to come your way, you can cope with it.
No,
it's not denying the emotion. It's just not feeling vulnerable or weak in it when confronted with it, that you'll be okay and that you're enough to deal with it.
Totally. You also talk in the book about the happiness myth. And I love the fact that you include this, because there's this whole thing, isn't there? Oh, I'll do it when I'll be happy when the kids have left home, when there's such a big part of this, isn't it? This sort of chasing happiness.
Very much. And I talk about that from personal experience. I've done it my whole life, Janie. I'd like to think I'm not doing it now, but I do have to check sometimes. It's always healthy, isn't it, just to check in. I fell foul of so many of those minefields that you can delay happiness, think you'll be happy when you've lost those pounds or got that job or met that guy or whatever it might be. And it's that chase, instead of either just the gratitude or the presence to accept that you are where you are and it's good. And I think it's also puts us on that treadmill of exhausting chasing. That's very much what was the sort of the undoing of me. It was the relentless chasing, often towards standards that I had set myself. So it wasn't like anyone was doing it to me. I was setting these standards. I was setting these goals. I was setting these I'll be happy whens. And then when they weren't happening, I was hugely disappointed in something that I was actually in control of recalibrating. I could or should have been able to see that I was literally punishing myself on a daily basis. And there's definitely parts of the book where I point out that in modern life, for various reasons, a lot to do with cultural, social norms, we fall into these habits of either I'll be happy when, or just as toxic, the comparisons that we draw with other people.
Good enough. I can't do that. Yeah.
Anything that basically has you feeling not enough, that you either haven't got enough, or you are not enough, or you are in some way, shape or form lacking what others might have, or what you would truly like, because it's a gap filler. Alcoholism, it fills the gaps. It fills gaps in our longing, whether we want to feel more connected or more successful, it's there to fill that gap. And the more we present ourselves or even create those gaps for ourselves, the more role it's going to have.
Yeah, totally. So what do you hope people will get from the book? What's the main intention?
I really wanted to offer something to people before crisis.
Yeah.
Before there was a sense of, oh crap, now what do I do? When there was still a real place for curiosity and compassion-led curiosity that just says, we live in a booze-soaked world. And as much as I wish we didn't, we do at the moment. Many of us drink. Most of us don't fall into problematic drinking as such, but it doesn't mean to say that it isn't getting in the way. It isn't a problem. It's like there are lots of little P's, even if it's like you never got quite enough money or your relationship, you keep having arguments and things keep blowing up. There's little problems as well as just big drinking problems. And I just wanted to put something in front of people that says, what if we didn't drink as much? What if we had different ways of managing our emotions? What if we took a little bit of an audit of our life and said, are you the person you want to be, doing what you dreamt of doing? Are you, with absolute radical candor, is life good enough?
Yeah.
And if it's not, then why not question
it to yourself? Yeah,
because it could. And by the way, the answer could be your attributes. Bloody good, thank you very much. Yeah, and it's like, good, but it could be great.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it's something I say a lot because people will sometimes say to me, oh, I know that you run the sober club and everything. And oh, sorry, is it a problem if I have a drink in front of you? I really
not
don't.
For me.
I don't care, Jack, if you have a drink. I would never say, if somebody says, I'm really happy out and drinking, fine. And there are people who you ask them that question, they go, I have half a shandy in the summer. And fine, crack on if you're happy. It's not about the amount of drink, the amount of alcohol. It's about whether that little voice pops up. It's the little voice, isn't it, really?
it's the little voice. But I think you've talked about this a lot, but we have a cultural question around, is my drinking bad enough? Because we have these black and white sort of stereotypes.
Yeah.
And as long as culturally we continue to ask those questions, we are culturally missing the bigger question, which is life good enough? Is your drinking bad enough? Is your life good enough? Yeah. That is the question we should be asking.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting to us. It's really great to have you on the pod. What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want. Thank you, Anna Donaghy. I really appreciate it. And huge, lots of success. And you'll have masses, all that press. It's fantastic. Donny.
Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on. It's been super. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you, Anna. The book is What Are You Thirsty For? It will be the details will all be in the show notes. And just a reminder again that you can come along to our event on Wednesday, the 1st of April, with Catherine Gray, no less. It's going to be amazing. It's at Bloomsbury in London. I'd love to see you there. Before that, Thursday, 17th of March, if you're interested in coming along to our webinar, Explore a Career as a Sober Coach. And also Tony's event is on the 11th of March. That's for guys, one of the coaches that I trained, teamed up with a few of the male coaches. We've got more and more guys coming through to do this work, actually, which is great too. And that's on Thursday, the 11th. So there's a bunch of things. If you go to theSoberClub.com/events, it would be great to connect with you. Also, don't forget to check it out if you haven't thought about joining us in the Sober Club yet. It is for you, whether you're early days or whether you've been sober for ages, because the amount of content we have in there is just incredible. The support, the encouragement, the community is second to none. And the actual sort of platform that we have, the library of content is just incredible. So whatever you've got going on, there'll be something there, whether you want to look at diet, nutrition, getting rid of your sugar cravings or regular cravings. We've got some sessions with William Porter. We've got sessions on NLP. We've got sessions on fitness, on shamanic movement, angels. Everything, crystals, everything is in there. And some real, you know, everything is not completely woo woo. In case you're thinking, oh, it doesn't sound quite right for me. there's plenty of completely regular stuff. We've got workouts, we've got yoga. It's all in there. So do check it out. It's very low cost. It's very high value. 100 quid off if you join for a year. Can't say further than that. So thesoberclub.com if you'd like to be connected. But as I say every single week, if the Sober Club isn't for you, if you don't want to join a community, that's okay. But don't do this completely alone. It will make it harder for you. I really recommend that if you're choosing to quit the booze, if you're early days, just tell someone. And that can absolutely be me. You can pop me a message on social media at Janie Lee Grace. You can find me on all the platforms at Janie Lee Grace. Just follow me, send me a message. If I get that message, I will reply to you and I'll hold the vision for you. And at least you'll have one person holding you accountable till you feel a bit stronger to join a community or whatever. You know, again, I know I've shared this before, but when I say tell someone, I don't necessarily mean go around telling absolutely everyone, because that can have its own issues. I've had several clients who've said that they have done this several times in the past. You know, most of us have been around the block a few times, in fairness, and they've told me that they've decided to quit the booze. They've told all their friends, all their family, who all kind of roll their eyes because, of course, they've seen it before. And somehow that makes them feel more nervous, more concerned, a bit more worried. They've got to sort of live up to these expectations of people who don't necessarily believe in them. And then it just takes the first phone call you weren't expecting, or, you know, thing to happen that wasn't quite right. And your unconscious mind is off. Oh, there, well, you know, who am I to think that I could do anything different? You need to tell people who have also done this. You need to tell people who know what it feels like to be in that place, who've walked the same path. Tell those people, because they're the ones who will absolutely cheer you on. They won't be judgmental. They won't be harsh. They won't, you know, tell you you're going to fail. They will support you to do this for you, you know. So be selective as to who you share what you're doing with. It absolutely is not the case that you have to spray this around to everyone in your vicinity to start with. You're doing this for you. Don't ever forget that. It's not for anyone else. It's the best thing you'll ever do for your health and well-being. It really is. Just very briefly, a thought just came to me. It was interesting at the talk that I was giving last weekend at the Wellness Way at the Health Hub. I was obviously sharing a bit about my journey to sobriety. The talk was all about holistic living generally, and I was sharing about how I quit. And someone asked the question, "Don't you miss the taste of alcohol?" And God, it was such an interesting question. And I said, you know, absolutely not. No, I don't miss it at all. In fact, I don't believe that anyone really loves the taste of alcohol. You know, when you're first given alcohol as a kid or a teenager, you tend to sort of screw your face up and spit it out, you know, if it's not too embarrassing because there's people watching. It's what it's covered up with that makes it passable. And it's, you know, getting used to it. It's an acquired taste, isn't it? When you're, there's not many 12-year-olds that genuinely like the taste of wine, you know, or even 18-year-olds. We learn to like it, don't we? Because we think it's the done thing, and because we think that, you know, if we do, we get the buzz. But actually, when you haven't drunk alcohol for a while and you accidentally cop a taste, which is what happened to me, I accidentally picked up the wrong glass and took a sip. God, I couldn't get to the sink quick enough to spit it out. It was literally like petrol. It was honestly like drinking gasoline. awful, just absolutely awful. So no, I certainly don't miss the taste. I really don't. So that's one less thing to have to worry about, isn't it? It's just the associations. It really is. So anyways, you know that I'll keep on telling you forever and a day. I'll keep on doing this podcast while ever I've got fantastic guests. And I'll keep on saying the same thing. If you know that your life could be better physically and emotionally without the booze, you owe it to yourself to go for it and move towards creating a life that you do not have to escape from. And if you want support on that, by the way, I do still offer one-to-one coaching myself. I train people to be coaches. There's lots of amazing coaches on my Find a Coach directory, and I still have some spaces myself. So reach out, get in touch, get some support. It's the best thing you'll ever do. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.